Hey, Ryan, since you're not going to the game, where are you planning on watching the Wildcats?
I'll be stuck at the office, but I wish I could be lounging at home in front of my TV.
Yeah, me too. I've been thinking about getting like a big comfy recliner from Sam Levitt's Furniture.
Ooh, stylish.
Sam Levitt's Furniture has specials on a wide selection of recliners, so you can watch the game in style. You can check out a bunch of options at their Tucson locations. I'm thinking of getting one with swivel action.
Ooh.
But I kind of like the one I saw with cup holders.
Well, while Justin makes up his mind about which recliner he likes best, let's talk some sports.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, we're back for the Wildcast Friday edition. I'm back in my place with Maggie, my dog, and Justin, my coworker.
What's going on?
We're drinking some coffee, eating some donuts, as always, and we're gonna preview a little red and blue, and talk about a little newsy things that have happened the last few days. I called out to Michael Lev last night to preview the Cal football game. We'll focus more on basketball right now because, you know, we can only talk about Khalil Tate in so many ways. But it feels like this is the least amount of excitement we've had around a red and blue game in my time in Tucson, right?
You said the least amount of excitement?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's excitement.
There's excitement, but it's not like the same.
More disappointment towards red and blue. Or yeah. I should say more awkwardness. You know, it's like everybody's going to be sitting in their seats at McHale Center like, eesh, this is awkward. Because, you know, you don't have no idea what the season's going to be like. We have no idea what's going to happen with the future of the program. So it's just like a weird cloud. Over Arizona basketball.
We'll talk more about red and blue in a bit, but there was, like I said, there's a couple newsy things the last couple days. We'll start with the newsiest, which would be the most recent, which is Javon Quinterly. I think I'm saying that right.
Quinterly.
Five-star point guard from New Jersey, tweeted around 8 p.m. on Thursday night that he's not going to be coming to Arizona. He decommitted. Not necessarily a surprise, that if you're not aware, he was implicated in the FBI complaint as a... His name wasn't listed, but it was like the timeline around his recruitment and when he announced he was committing to Arizona, and it implied that he took, what, $15,000, right? And the question mark was always going to be if he was going to be eligible at all, if it's proven that he took money, or even if he didn't, NCAA can declare that he's not eligible. They've done much less proof than that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you heard the news, what was your reaction?
It's about right. Yeah. I mean, I didn't expect the timing of it, you know, right before red-blue game. In the middle of Lonzo Ball's debut with the Lakers, the Dodgers just clinched the World Series. There was just a lot going on in sports last night where I was just chilling on my couch.
You were focused on the Dodgers.
And then all of a sudden Twitter's going ballistic because Arizona loses a five-star point guard. But when I see reactions of, oh my goodness, you know, Arizona basketball continuing to fall down, I'm like, man, we knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And even when he initially committed...
It'll be bigger news if Sharif or Brandon Williams...
Exactly. But even when he initially committed, it was, okay, it's another point guard to the class because the first one was Brandon Williams. And then when he committed, it's like, oh, man, you know, you're going to see Arizona with three point guards next year with Barcelo, Williams, and Quinterly. And when he decommitted, or according to him, retract my commitment... I'm like, I think what he did is he typed decommit, but it's not technically a word. So he's like, oh, wait, I can't use that. I got to
every time I type the word decommit, when Arizona football
red line.
Or it changes to recommit automatically. Yeah. It pisses me off.
So I expected this to happen. I mean, Arizona basketball, I think people need to pump the brakes. It's not falling off the tracks just yet. Arizona still has Sharif O'Neal, Brandon Williams, but... You know, they're definitely losing guys that they should have got.
And they're not in the running for guys.
And exactly. And like you said, like we talked about, Bol Bol, who was the number two player in the country. R.J. Barrett, who's the number one player in the country.
And Simi Chitu.
Like
they were all, they all either had visits playing to Arizona or probably would have maybe even come to the red and blue game. And that they just completely eliminated Arizona. And I think, I don't know if all three of them did, but at least two of them said, I think Barrett and Bol said that they were eliminating Arizona because of the investigation.
Exactly. They just came out and said it straight up. So, I mean, it's crazy because Sean Miller, was starting to get to that point where every single year was going to be his best class ever.
When it seemed like every recruit that was considering him was committing to Arizona. Like it was like at that point where he was just like firing at all cylinders.
So Sean Miller's not going to have his best recruiting class every single year. So let's pump the brakes a little bit. Time will only tell with the future of the program, but we expected Cornerly to retract his commitment. So.
Yeah. I know there's a Twitter mailbag question. We'll touch more on that in a little bit. The other newsy thing, which is more positive, and there's some mixed reactions, but mostly people excited. Dave Hickey went on a radio show in Phoenix, and I think Greg Hansen had heard this in the last week or two, that they're exploring an alcohol license for McHale Center. It's not exactly what I expected. I thought the news would be Arizona Stadium, but you got to start somewhere, I guess. And it's intriguing. I don't know if McHale needs anything to draw more fans in, but I mean, it never hurts to have booze at everybody likes beer at an event, and he said beer and wine. So I'm intrigued by it. I think the bigger news will be when it's at the football stadium, because if they're anything you can get to draw people to go to the football games, I think that would help, especially with the students that are 21, who most of them leave by halftime because they're all hungover by then and
losing their buzz
and losing their buzz, and they've been drinking all day because the games are at 8 p.m. But I don't know. Are you excited about this?
Yes, hell yeah!
We saw what it did at High Corbett.
Yeah, well, you're starting to see High Corbett being sold out on, or not sold out, but pretty packed on a consistent basis, and. Yeah, alcohol prices are going to be a little pricey just because it's Arizona and that's what they do. But I already know a lot of season ticket holders that go to Arizona basketball games that go to places like Grimaldi's and have a few glasses of wine and then go to the game.
Yeah.
Why can't they just say, hey, let's go have some pizza. Let's go get some wine at the game. And when you have beer... guys love beer. You know what I mean? When they watch their sports, they love beer. Oh, yeah.
This is having it in your hand.
This is great. This is great for Arizona. I'm so pumped for it. And plus, McHale's already crazy. Just imagine when they're a little buzzed. That's gonna be pretty wild.
So the Star usually has a couple seats courtside. That's not a humble brag. I guess it kind of sounds like one. By me saying that, it kind of sounds like one. But usually it's just Bruce and Greg down there, and they deserve that. But the point being, there's a few fans in that section who are pretty particularly like loud and yelling at officials and things like that. And in that sense, it might not be enjoyable for the media when we're hearing all the drunk fans yelling, why did the ref do that?
Travel!
You're an idiot, ref. that was Justin and Zach being drunk. I mean, Dave Hickey has mentioned, I think he mentioned this on the radio show he was on, it's not necessarily going to bring in much revenue. It's more for the fans than for the money making. But yeah, as Justin pointed out, like people like grabbing a beer before the game, and why not grab it at the stadium? If I was going to fix anything at McHale, it would be like the food that they sell at McHale, because it's been the same thing for like, I'm assuming decades, because it's just crap, honestly. Like, I mean, the best thing is Paws and Claws, which are like average chicken nuggets and fries. Like, they're fine.
Or the cheap popcorn that they charge $20 in a big old bucket.
Yeah, it's like $5 for Twizzlers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have like the most bland candy possible.
Too. Yeah.
It's like
M&M's, Twizzlers. You know,
M&M's and Twizzlers or Red Vines or whatever.
get your boy some Reese's, man. But I'm so pumped for it. I mean, it sucks for the cleanup crew afterwards, because I mean, we always see them
beer.
just going.
You've been to a pro sporting event where there's beer spilled everywhere.
Yeah, and I guess it could be easier to clean on concrete, because I guess you could just spray it down. But McHale's got this weird like bleacher seats where it gets in the crevices and stuff like that, so you kind of have to like scrape it a little bit. So if you're drinking at McHale Center, if it happens, just watch yourself.
I'm curious what kind of beer they get in the mix.
Oh,
what kind of beer? Will it be like a High Corbett? I think High Corbett has like Blue Moon, like Shock Top, and then some of the usual cheap ones. But Greg Hansen will push for Stella. I know that's his beer choice.
That'd be cool if
or if they got a deal with
Craft.
Yeah, or like Barrio.
Barrio.
Yeah.
Man.
If you're listening to Dave Hickey, which you're not.
Hit a Barrio. People love their IPAs, man. So, Barrio Blonde. That's what I expect of Mikhail Sanders.
I could talk about booze with Justin all day, but we'll transition to a little mini preview about red and blue. I mean, there's only so much you can preview for scrimmage, but, I mean, one of the most the biggest attractions for this thing is usually the dunk contest. Who do you think's in the dunk contest and who do you think's win? I feel like it's for sure going to have Brandon Randolph. Usually it's all new guys, maybe like some returners. So I feel like Brandon Randolph, Ayton will be in the mix. Ira Lee, Parcello probably can't dunk.
No Parker.
Parker Jackson Cartwright will be lifted up by Deuce Unwristed.
Usually
like four, I feel like, right?
Well, we all know Raleigh Alkins isn't going to come back and
what if he only
reclaim the style.
And dunk over Miller again.
Yeah.
Who else?
Brandon Randolph.
There's someone maybe
you sure. Might see Keanu Pinder try to.
Yeah, they usually throw a big man in. Oh, and yeah. DeAndre Ayton's not a regular big man, so he doesn't count. Yeah. I could see Pinder.
Pinder the
maybe one more.
The kangaroo.
Oh, that's four right there. So maybe that's the four. But I feel like Randolph is probably the winner. My impression is that he's a great athlete.
Yeah,
we haven't seen much of him besides like those overseas scrimmages they did. But
yeah, people are sleeping on Pinder though. I think Pinder's
bouncy.
I think he they call him the kangaroo for a reason.
They actually call him that.
I don't know. Hey, it's a better nickname than Desert Ghost. I'll tell you that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll call him the kangaroo. We're gonna make that a thing right now. Call him the kangaroo. But
well, you better have some good dunks, or he's gonna disappoint the kangaroo nickname.
Yeah, then
he'll be a kangaroo without the bounce.
So yeah, I totally.
He's Australian, if you weren't aware, by the way.
That's probably why they call him the kangaroo, just because he's Australian. But yeah, Brandon Randolph, Ira Lee.
He seems like the favorite.
Yeah.
I mean, DeAndre Ayton might get the most cheers and stuff, just because anytime a 7-footer does something, he like gets a little more credit. Like remember Dwight Howard winning the dunk contest and stuff? It wasn't like that impressive, but it's because he's bigger, they like give him a little more credit. But
yeah,
he is a freaky athlete, so who knows?
But it just,
if he dunks from the 3-point line.
Yeah, that's a winner right there. I mean, that's a winner in the NBA. But I just don't see DeAndre Ayton winning because he's so long. I feel like he can't do anything flashy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's more just like jumping from far away.
Yeah. So where Brandon Randolph, he can do all a bunch of stuff and make it look cool and everybody's just in awe. So
yeah,
I got Brandon Randolph as my winner.
Yeah. All right. Who are you most excited to watch today? I mean, DeAndre Ayton's the obvious one. Like, who else are you excited to see?
Who else am I excited to see? Definitely, is Chase Jeter playing?
Yeah, usually they let them play. I'm interested in watching him. They usually have the guy that's redshirting play.
Yeah, because, you know, he's going to be playing next year. He's going to be a key part of Arizona next year, so it'd be nice to see.
Especially if they're not going
to
get a full class of recruits.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to play an even bigger role than
he's definitely going to start next
year. He'll be, what, a junior, right?
Yeah.
He'll have 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty valuable. It's kind of, it's pretty rare you see, like, a big-time program player transfer to another big-time program. Usually they kind of go down a peg, but you kind of...
Yeah.
That's pretty
neat. Or they go up a peg. They're mid-major guy
goes
to bigger conference. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see Chase Jeter. And even if, like, say they don't get another big man for this class, I mean, they're losing DeAndre Ayton and Deuce Unwristed. So
you can
see Chase Jeter possibly playing small ball five.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'd be kind of...
A lot of the guys they were going after in this class were centers, and now they're not.
Now they're all gone.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited to see him play. We've already seen Brandon Randolph and everything that he could do when Arizona played in Spain.
Yeah.
He looked great.
I'm curious about, like, Dylan Smith. He sat out all last year. He's supposed to be a good shooter. He doesn't really get mentioned much, but I'm curious if he's going to play a role this year. Because when he transferred, I mean, he has, like, 3 years of eligibility, too, so he's kind of intriguing, but...
That's why I wish they did a three-point contest. I'd love to see him and Trier.
I mean, they have more shooters than they've ever had. Barcelo.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's Barcelo's another guy I'd love to see because, you know, when Parker's gone, now that Quinterly's out of the equation for Arizona,
it could be Williams and him.
Mm-hmm. So, to see how he runs the offense.
Miller goes out of his way to rave about Barcelo whenever he can, even if he's not asked about him. So.
Mini TJ.
I'm not sure. He's a little bigger than TJ. But. All right, I guess, how do you feel like the fans, or just in general, what do you think the reception is going to be to Miller / the team? I feel like the team is in the clear, but I'm curious about what the reaction is for Sean Miller.
Yeah, Sean Miller...
I wonder if it'll be mixed, if it'll be full support, if it'll be some people booing. Like you just don't know what's coming.
Well, in years past, Sean Miller always grabs the microphone and stands instead of court.
Like, we're going to be amazing.
You know, we're going to fight. We're going to win every single game for you guys.
He never looks comfortable doing that stuff. That's not like his forte.
Yeah, well, and he's in front of 15,000 people, but I think he's under the pressure, like, all you guys look up to me. I'm gonna so no matter even if I mess up, even if I stutter on this mic, I'm still better than all. No, Sean Miller's not like that, yeah. But
he's not LeVar Ball.
Yeah. So I think he's gonna grab the microphone tonight. It's gonna be awkward, and see that's where I don't know how the fans are gonna react.
I think everybody might be quiet, just kind of trying to see what he says to them. You know, I don't know, because we've got even just like from the stuff we've written and tweeted, we've gotten such mixed reactions. Where there's people on the extreme, we've mentioned this before, there's people on the extreme of Miller didn't do anything, he didn't know anything, we should all be supporting him, you guys suck for not supporting him, even though you're unbiased supporters. But and you have people on the flip side who are like, ugh, I can't believe he did this.
I'm down on the team.
Yeah, there's people making jokes, people that are legit upset. So I'm curious to see. I think that's the storyline. If there's a storyline for a scrimmage, it's that for this team.
Fans' reaction.
Yeah. So. It's funny because... If not, all the talk would be everybody's first chance to see DeAndre Ayton in person. Like, that's 100% what it would be. Or Raleigh Elkins' injury and watching the guy. Oh, Akot, I'm interested to see play, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think he didn't play that much in the overseas stuff, right?
Could he be in the dunk contest, too?
Yeah, I guess. Potentially good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but going back to the fans thing, I totally agree with you, Zach. I think it's going to be pretty quiet, pretty awkward, but... Maybe if Sean Miller says something motivational, then he'll get a big cheer or applause. I don't expect anybody to boo, just because that would just look very bad. Very, very bad. And I don't think people would pay money to go to watch their favorite team
and then boo them
at a scrimmage. At a scrimmage, hey, you know?
Ask Chargers fans about going.
he had to bring that up.
It was just amazing. The Eagles game in particular, because I watch every Eagles game.
There's more Eagles fans there.
Yeah, well, and like the players on the Eagles were like confused when the other team was getting booed and they were on the road. Across the country, by the way.
That's just, yeah.
It's bad.
That's bad.
But you're living large on the Dodgers right now.
Somebody told me liking the Chargers is like liking Hufflepuff and Harry Potter.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, my God.
So
that's great.
House Hufflepuff right here.
Oh, man, that's so funny. All right. On that note, we'll go over to the Twitter mailbag. I've heard rumors that we might be getting a jingle of some sort to introduce the Twitter mailbag in the future.
It's going
to
be God introducing Ask Blatt.
All right. First question comes from at DTAS22. He said, alcohol was terrific for High Corbett. Would be a godsend for Arizona Stadium. Why is the application only for McHale? They're probably just starting somewhere, and it is the middle of the season for football. Though you'd have to ask Greg Byrne why they haven't pursued it in the past for either one, right?
Well, in the prime of Greg Byrne's tenure at Arizona, he never had a attendance issue. I mean, his last year...
His problem was them not staying the whole game.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, he sold out McHale Center every single game. Arizona Stadium... Arizona football was still relatively good or decent.
So
big games they would sell out. Regular games it would be mostly filled. And once they started being bad, that's when it started going away. So Arizona Athletics needed something to hang their hat on. So this is what Dave Hickey's doing.
Yeah. I mean, for all the bad pub they've gotten for various things, he's done a good job of kind of trying to do all the things that the fans want between the indoor practice facility, hiring Frank Bush's son, Augie, for the swimming coach, the softball stuff, like, and the extensions for Jay Johnson and Kendrick. Like, he's done a lot of good positive PR things. It's just, he's just kind of been, like, he would be, like, being raved about right now if not for the other stuff, which none of it is his fault. So.
Yeah.
But he's done a good job of handling it, it seems like. I mean, he was willing to talk to the media after, which I don't know many ADs that would do that.
Even, he didn't really provide us any answers during that interview. It was just like, hey, we're trying everything we can to make sure that this investigation goes smoothly. You guys will have more details when the time is right.
Yeah,
that's more than what Miller gave us, and Miller's
more than he's gonna give us.
Miller's in the center of it, not Dave Hickey. So I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see how Miller is after the red and blue game. Then,
yeah,
Bruce throws him a question. All right, at Truitt, Kevin asks, any idea on the Scotty Young injury? Is it multi-week? From what I've heard from people close to the team, it's most likely at least a couple weeks, and then depending on how he is after that, there's potential for surgery, and it would make him miss a lot more than that. So you're probably going to see a heavy dose of Troy Young in the next couple weeks, which we heard a lot about in the preseason. We'll find out what he's made of, and he certainly looks the part. Kwesi Maciek, safety who played pretty well last week, said that he looks like he's from the SEC, and he definitely physically looks the part, so we'll see if he can handle the reps. At MP Zicarelli asks, first to third, who wins in a foot race between you, Maggie, and Khalil Tate? Maggie is, like, insanely fast, actually. Like, fastest dog I've ever seen. But Khalil probably takes the first place. I guess it depends on the distance and, like, if they're getting a running head start. Because Maggie would keep it a lot closer than you would think. But, yeah, I'm in a distant third, that's for sure.
Yeah, Maggie, she's got that quick speed where she can get...
She also's got four that she's running on. Khalil's only running on two. I don't know if that's...
That's an advantage right there. That's double the speed.
Yeah.
Double the speed.
I mean, if you've seen her at the dog park, like, dude, she's fast. But, yeah, I'd say Khalil probably wins, but closer than you think.
What's at the finish line?
True. Is there... Maggie...
If there's a big piece of salami right there, I got Maggie.
Interesting.
But if there's a starting quarterback spot, then I got Khalil.
if there's two defensive linemen and a hole in between them,
Khalil. All
right. At AJS3677, will Arizona have any top 20 recruits for 2018 by spring? Do Brandon Williams and Sharif O'Neal both leave as well? Well, their status with Arizona will make or break this recruiting class, obviously, because it's only two deep. I'm not entirely convinced they'll get anyone else, but I did see that a guy named Tyler Hero, who's a top 25 recruit, a shooting guard from Wisconsin, who just decommitted from Wisconsin. And my impression from the Twitterverse and social media is that he's considering Arizona, and he really liked them before he committed to Wisconsin. So he'd be a name to keep an eye on. I'm not convinced they're going to get any other elite recruits. There's just too much up in the air. And I think Miller's biggest job right now is just recruiting the heck out of Sharif and Brandon Williams and just doing everything they can to keep them up. I'm not convinced that Sharif is still going to come here personally. There's still a lot of time between... I don't think that either of them are going to sign for the early signing period. If they do, then that would be a huge win. But
well, if Tyler Hero comes to Wisconsin, man, that's the first time Miller's ever beaten Wisconsin.
Hey! Zing! Man, that would be a great joke if that happens. You gotta save that. Keep that in your back pocket.
Save it.
But yeah, as for top 20, I guess... Technically, I don't think any of those guys are top 20, so probably not. The guys that would have been top 20 that they would have gotten are Barrett, Bull, Chateau, and they're not coming here. So it's a weird time for recruiting. Tonight, they have like a few recruits from 2019 and 2020 coming. It's just clear they're just planning further down the line, but who knows if hypothetically sanctions might apply to those years. So who knows? But although Arizona, even with minimal scholarships, they're going to lose a bunch of players off this year's team. Yeah. I mean, Ristic's gone. Ayton's for sure. He's like pretty much said he's leaving after a year. You figure Raleigh Alkins will leave.
Trier.
Trier's definitely gone. Parker's, I mean.
That's your starting five.
That's starting five. That's crazy. Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see a guy like Brandon Randolph, if he has a really good year, and they start talking about him as a prospect, at least like testing the waters. So next year is going to be interesting. Like they need to get, they might need to sneak in some more transfers or something. Like I haven't even thought about that, honestly.
They're gonna have to rely on...
Like, and they need Sharif and Williams players to be ready, which isn't guaranteed either. Mm-hmm. Like, you never know with freshmen. So, wow, the roster might be the least excitement that we felt going into a team in a while.
And it's still a talented roster.
It's still talented, yeah. And the Pac-12 is not great right now either, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. I guess that's a storyline down the line when we talk about how they look for next year. But all right, at MP Shrike asked, has the NCAA initiated a formal investigation yet, or are they waiting on the FBI to finish theirs? What's the best case scenario? You've pretty much talked about this. Like, we just don't know.
Well,
the NCAA, who the hell knows? They'll take like 3 years to decide anything. But the FBI, for all we know, has more stuff coming out. So
who asked that?
At MP Shrike.
MP Shrike, you know the best case scenario. There's a worst case scenario, best case scenario. Best case scenario, they somehow get out of this unscathed.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario,
everybody gets fired and no scholarships and death postseason penalty. Ban. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like this one, I don't know how much we can answer this, but R. Bauer on 1856 asked if allegations in the Bradford lawsuit are true, Orlando Bradford. How different from Baylor, where the coach and the AD knowingly endangered female students. That story we published last week was not a good look. It extends further than just the football team with Orlando Bradford. There was a lot. You have to read the thing. It's really well reported by Caitlin Schmidt. I mean, the gist of the lawsuit being that they could have stopped, prevented some things from happening, and they had many chances to, and they didn't with Bradford, and he allegedly abused, I think, 3 different girls, including one U of A athlete, and I don't want to get into, like, the legal weeds, and, like, it's hard for, it's, I can't really compare it to the Baylor thing, because we just don't know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look good, that's for sure.
Well, Baylor, it was, that was several worse. Players.
Yeah.
Several players, and several players in multiple incidents.
And they covered it up.
And they covered it up.
It wasn't that they didn't do anything, they covered it up.
Yeah. Where this is one player who had a few incidents. It's still very bad.
Yeah, very.
Both, I mean, whether you look at both sides of the equation, it's still very bad. And
the most alarming thing from that story, there was a part where it talked about how it seems like at the University of Arizona athletic department, if the player is a good player, he gets more lenient treatment than a player who doesn't. And that's the worst look. I mean, the stuff that Orlando Bradford did is worse. Like, it's jarring reading the stuff he did. But the fact that, you know, Scotty Young and there's been a few other cases in the past where they were a little more lenient than they should have been. I mean, it's something that's going to – hasn't blown – the story itself hasn't blown up quite like I thought it would, but it's going to be something to keep an eye on for sure. All right. We can we'll end on that note.
All right.
I talked to Michael last night. We'll go to that phone call now. Thanks for listening. Thanks for shopping in, Justin.
Oh, absolutely. Maggie, thanks for having me once again.
Yeah, Maggie says hello, everybody. All right, call it to Michael.
You'll win a race.
All right, we got Michael on the other line. We're recording this on a Thursday night, kind of unique because Michael's got to fly out to the Bay Area tomorrow. Michael, you excited for this road trip?
I am. I'm excited to do a little Wildcast After Dark.
Nice. Hashtag Wildcast After Dark. I like it.
What's up, man? What do you got for me this week?
You know, just a few things to talk about. Well, I mean, you and I were texting. I mean, we've been talking about this all week, but we're at the midway point of the season, and Arizona, like, is in a way different spot than that we even thought they would be, like, 2 weeks ago. Like, it's just wild how much – if you just listen to the Friday podcast, you could just hear, like, our changing tones as the season goes on.
I wonder who's responsible for that. Zach, any ideas? Any particular player –
I don't know.
Have had a large role in that turnaround.
You know, I feel like the return of Trevor Wood a couple weeks ago is what is what did it. I mean, Khalil Tate is the name we've probably written and said more in the last 2 weeks than we ever said or wrote our entire careers before that. So,
it's what's really funny about it is I think back to our preview of the Colorado game,
mm-hmm.
and we probably did mention, I think.
Yeah, we predicted he would play.
That Khalil was, we mentioned that he's available now, he's healthy, he could be an option that Rich could turn to at some point, and then, you know, obviously what happened, things got, you know, so everything, it was amazing how that one play where Brandon Dawkins got injured seemingly changed the fortunes for the entire season and the program. I mean, there were some people who thought they'd win 4 games the entire year. That could still happen. Obviously, they're at 4 right now, but true. It certainly doesn't feel like it's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think we kind of figured Tate, if Dawkins kept struggling, which he had given no indication that he wouldn't be struggling anymore, I feel like we kind of thought he would play in the second half. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly the timing of when he came in and the way he went for 4 quarters and won that game for them. You know, who knows if he would have been playing from behind if he started in the third quarter or something.
Right. We thought he could play at some point. We just also didn't know how good he would be.
Yeah, that was the thing. Because it's pretty reasonable to think, okay, he wasn't good enough to beat out this other guy who's been struggling. So what's the reason for that? And now we're finding out that maybe his speed doesn't show in practice like it does in games.
He talked about that on Wednesday. We're confirming my theory.
Gamer.
They blow the whistle most of the time, you know. He might get 10 or 15 yards downfield. They don't want to let him go at that point. They blow the whistle. They want to, you know, get as many plays in at practice as they can. And we talked about how that 71-yard touchdown against UCLA was a broken play. You don't practice broken plays.
Yeah.
You know, he has some unique abilities to improvise and freelance that I don't think show up on the practice field. So that's why, you know, on more than one occasion, you know, I think Rich Rod has said, like, he's been better than we thought he would be. Now, you can blame the coaches for not being able to see that, and I know a lot of our Twitter followers have done that very thing, and they're still exasperated, and they can't understand it, but I think they should look at the bright side. You know, it happened. Here he is, and, you know, brighter days seem to be ahead here.
It's funny. I've referenced this with Justin in past podcasts, but it's like Rich Rod can do no right and Sean Miller can do no wrong with like a large portion of the Arizona fan base. Arizona finally finds its quarterback and has two like great wins, and everybody's kind of more focused on the fact that he wasn't playing the whole time. Rich kind of joked about that on Monday. It's like you can't win pretty much, but I mean,
I think nothing to me points out how startling this turnaround is than the fact that Rich Rodriguez is now being mentioned as a possible Pac-12 coach of the year.
Crazy.
Where, like, 2 weeks ago, everybody wanted to fire him.
Yeah. I mean,
think about that.
Yeah. I mean, if the season ended today, I mean, you would have a case right now, honestly. Like.
Yeah, we obviously have a long way to go.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I'm saying, like, right now.
But you could definitely make a case based on what the preseason expectations were. You could make a case that whoever wins this game on Saturday
totally,
you know, might take the lead in that race for Coach of the Year, because Cal, I mean, everyone thought they would be the worst team in the conference this year. I certainly did. And if they were to win that game, they'd be one game shy of bowl eligibility.
Yeah. I mean, and it's funny. I kind of joked about how we referenced Tate and everything. Like, I wrote a story about Charlie Regal that's in tomorrow's paper, and I couldn't even, like, resist having my entire lead about Khalil Tate somehow still. that's the topic of discussion.
I made the joke in our Pac-12 power rankings that we're contractually obligated to mention him at least once in everything that we write.
Yeah.
And
it's hard not to.
It's really hard not to. Well, I mean, we talked about it many times leading into the season, and early in the season, both, you know, in our post-game videos and on these podcasts. I mean, you have to have the quarterback. And you can see what a difference it makes. Now, obviously, you know, Nick Wilson being back healthy is a big factor, and the offensive line is playing better, but it all kind of comes together when you've got that quarterback who can not only, you know, threaten teams with his spectacular running, but can make those basic passing plays that are going to be there when you can run the ball effectively as Arizona has.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, I feel like, is now going forward, beyond the question of whether he can keep doing this, I feel like the biggest thing will just be him staying healthy, because if he gets hurt, then all of a sudden you may be in trouble again, right?
100%.
Yeah.
I think there's, you know, someone, our colleagues over at AZ Desert Swarm, they did a kind of a round table where they predicted the second half of the season, and we're going to do that later in this podcast. But, you know, some of the reaction from my followers to that piece, they were pretty cautious. You know, they were kind of wary about, you know, something bad being around the corner. And obviously the worst fear for anybody is Khalil getting hurt. You know, you never know when that might happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much you can do about it. But I like the fact that, you know, he's kind of trying to run away from people now as opposed to
running through them.
It seemed like there was a time when he was just, like, hitting the chuck stick.
Yeah.
You know, every time.
Well, he did that flip the other day.
Yeah, that flip was not a smart move at all. But you know what? This whole issue with his speed. I mean, we saw it in the Colorado game. He didn't necessarily trust his speed on that one play where he was kind of running down up the right hash, and then he cut back and cut back again. It looked like if he just, you know, kept sprinting toward the pylon, he would have made it. He might be just learning himself now. Hey, I'm lighter. I'm quicker. I'm faster now. You know, I don't have to make all these moves. I can just run away from people. Maybe it's taking him a little bit of time to adjust to that.
Yeah. And, you know, going into this week, it's actually going to kind of escalate each week going forward, but I feel like this is going to be his toughest challenge he's faced yet. So how do you think Cal tries to handle him? They obviously have some people on staff that are familiar with him because they were on Arizona staff like Regal. But, I mean, how do you feel like they approach it?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things. One, you know, I think they're going to bring that eighth man up into the box on a regular basis, and they're going to dare Arizona to either run into that or try to throw against it. And then I think, you know, when they do get into, you know, if they do get into third and long situations, I think they're going to try to mix things up and fool him a little bit, you know. I mean, he's taken advantage of man coverage on a lot of these long passes, you know, one-on-one situations.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he maybe throws some zone blitzes at him, some other types of zone coverages, caused him to hesitate a little bit. You know, I mean, I hate to say it, but he's kind of due for a turnover.
Yeah.
You know, he's played, like, flawless football for two straight games. He's bound to make a mistake at some point. What I'm really interested to see more than anything is if Khalil Tate does make a mistake, turns the ball over, faces some adversity, how does he handle that? You know, because everything has kind of gone his way and the Wildcats' way for, you know, for eight straight quarters. You know, what happens when it doesn't? How does he respond? You know, I think he's going to respond well because nothing seems to faze him. You know, he's just got that, like, that kind of that flat line of heartbeat. But I'd almost like to see it just because it would be interesting to see how he handles it.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing to consider, I know people still seem to kind of be overlooking Cal a little bit, even after last week's game, but they've proven they're very good at home. Their defense force, and I know they're really banged up. They just lost their best defensive player for the season. They lost some offensive players, but they forced, I think, what, four interceptions off Luke Falk, and they sacked him 9 times. So,
I think it was five.
Five interceptions. So, I mean, this is a guy that doesn't throw picks. I know he's slow, so it's a different kind of, you know, dynamic, but their defense, maybe their offense doesn't have as many weapons as Cal usually does, but their defense is going to be a challenge. So I don't know. I might predict it's going to be kind of lopsided, but I don't know if it'll actually turn out that way.
They have very quickly, you know, taken on the image of their head coach. You know, for years and years, they were
Sonny Dykes.
A soft team. You know, they were an offensive-oriented team, and their defense was pretty bad. It's completely flipped around. You know, part of it is that they have lost three of their best playmakers on offense for the season. Demetrius Robertson, Melky Stovall, and the running back Trey Watson. I mean, that's a lot of firepower. You mentioned their top tackler, Devontae Downs. He's out for the season now. Arizona fans can relate to what that's like. I mean, losing that many guys, they are not an explosive offense. They rank near the bottom of the Pac-12 in most of those categories. So to me, if I'm Cal, I mean, I'm trying to ugly up this game. You know, I'm going to try to run the ball. I'm going to try to milk the clock, force some turnovers, win on special teams. You know, whereas Arizona, you know, I feel like they want to make it a track meet. You know, they want to get Khalil Tate and J.J. Taylor out in space. So it's going to be an interesting battle, you know, between two styles and tempos, you know, to see who prevails in that regard.
For sure. All right, before we get into our midseason awards review thingy, let's just throw some predictions here. How do you think this game goes? What do you got the final score being?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a game that's going to depend a lot on the mental approach for both teams. Will Cal have a letdown after their super emotional, you know, primetime national TV victory over Washington State? Will Arizona be a little bit flat after, you know, beating UCLA for the first time during the Rich Rod era and then having Washington State coming in the following week, you know, a game that they've probably had circled on their calendars all year because of what happened up in Pullman last year. So it's going to be a test of their mental discipline in a lot of ways to stay focused and be, you know, have the proper level of intensity. I think that they are hungry. I think they're capable of doing this. And I think that Khalil is just an X factor that gives them an edge in a game where maybe the talent level is about even. So I'm going to take Arizona to win again by a score of 31-24.
Okay. Yeah, you know, in the past, even when Cal was in its bad years, Arizona kind of struggled against them randomly. I mean, they beat them still almost every time. And you look at the 2014, they had no business winning that game. They were down by like 4 touchdowns going into the fourth or something like that, and they won on a Hail Mary. That was the last time they played each other, actually. I don't think it's going to be quite like that. I don't think Cal has the offensive firepower. And I think Khalil keeps going in the right direction. I don't know if he gets 300 yards, but maybe he gets 150. So I got Arizona 35 and Cal 21.
Is this the first time? Well, I mean, other than, you know, like UTEP. And
yes, it is.
Arizona, that you've picked Arizona to win a game?
It is, and that means they're going to lose. So so sorry, Arizona.
The Zach
effect. Zach effect is way different than the Khalil Tate effect.
I think it's the opposite.
Yeah, more of a curse. But yeah, so let's go on to the midseason awards. You know, the first one can go pretty quick. I mean, you wrote midseason reviews about the offense and the defense, and you gave MVP awards to both sides. I think we both agree that Khalil Tate, even in two games, is their MVP just by virtue of who he's beaten and how he's done it, right?
I don't see how you can pick anybody else. I mean, if you want to go with, Eldridge or...
I was going to say the kind of stalwarts of
the offensive line, but there's no one else who stands out on that side of the ball in a major way.
Yeah.
You know, Khalil's got 643 rushing yards already.
Crazy.
In, you know, two-plus games. He's averaging 160.8 rushing yards per game. That's because he played twice before. He's averaging 16.5 yards per carry. He's completed 74.3% of his passes. He's the offensive MVP.
Yeah. I was going to say, if I was going to pick a runner-up, I would just say the offensive line. But, yeah, that's not an MVP. So, because they have been a little bit better than I expected, actually. But, yeah, and then on defense, you want to say who you picked?
Yeah, I picked in the paper on Thursday, and the story's online now. You can check it out, everybody. I did midseason analysis for offense and defense. I picked Kylan Wilborn. I thought there were several candidates for that award, but Wilborn has just kind of made like an impact play in every game, whether it's a sack, a forced fumble. He's got 7 tackles for losses. That leads the team. He's got 5 sacks. That leads the team. 3 forced fumbles. That leads the team. Really amazing performance by a guy who was kind of an under-the-radar recruit in this 2017 class.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. He's just, I mean, a lot of the stats were padded in that last UCLA game, but it was such a good game that it's kind of worthy. And he, like you said, he's made at least a play in each game. I mean, if there was any other candidates, they would probably be Jace Whitaker, who had a great game this week and has gradually gotten a lot better and is emerging as like an all-conference potential level talent. And Tony Fields has probably been their most consistent defensive player, but I don't think he's necessarily had like a huge game yet. So I don't think he deserves
MVP. He hasn't made those same kind of impact plays. He has no turnovers caused. So, you know, those guys were in the conversation though, and you know, Demetrius Flanagan fouls.
Started off high.
3 interceptions and 2 fumble recoveries, and hasn't been maybe quite as spectacular as Kylan has been at times, but very good player. Also, I said on Twitter that, you know, one of the best signs for this defense is that there are multiple candidates for this award. You know, whereas last year you're like struggling to find anybody.
Yeah, you're struggling to find one. But yeah. So we both agree on Wilborn. All right, how about best newcomer? I mean, Wilborn seems like an obvious one, but I guess if it wasn't Wilborn, who would you pick?
If it wasn't,
yeah.
I would probably go with Tony Fields. But again, I mean, the nice thing about this is there are a lot of candidates. Tony Fields has started every game. He's tied for the team lead in tackles with 37. He also has 3 sacks. Colin Schooler has been an impact player from the jump. You know, now starting at Mike linebacker. He's got 26 tackles.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a sack. He's got an interception that he almost returned for a touchdown. Also has a forced fumble. Derek Bowles is a newcomer. Also, a transfer. Has 21 tackles. The next highest total for an interior defensive lineman is 11. So he's had an impact also. And we mentioned Wilborn. On the offensive side,
Bryce Wolma.
More of a veteran group, you know. Bryce Wolma, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a safety valve, and he's one of their most consistent guys.
Props to Bryce Wolma.
Yeah,
he's
totally.
He's made the tight end Moose. Thing at Arizona again.
Moose.
19 receptions, second on the team. Who would be your runner-up after Wilborn for newcomer of the year?
I don't know. I was thinking either Wolma or Tony Fields, just because... I mean, like we talked about Fields' consistency, but Wolma's kind of been under the radar, consistent every week. He's kind of led them in receptions pretty consistently, and he's emerged at a position that they haven't really thrown the ball to and kind of forced them to. So, especially with like a young quarterback, I could see him having a pretty good second half, honestly.
His blocking, by the way, was excellent in the last game.
Really? Yeah, I didn't even notice that. But
that was an area where I felt like he was behind Trevor Wood, and he may have caught up to him.
Wow, that's crazy. All right. I mean, on that note, I mentioned the second half. Who's your pick for someone who maybe hasn't, like, broken out yet, who you think could break out in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think you probably know where I'm going with this. J.J. Taylor.
Okay.
He's been good he hasn't been as spectacular as we saw in those two games last year, and I think it's coming. I think it's only a matter of time. You know, Nick Wilson is kind of he's having that, you know, that effect of kind of battering the defense and wearing them out. They're paying tons of attention to Khalil Tate. I think it's only a matter of time before J.J. Taylor has some big breakout plays, a breakout game. You know, he's averaging 4.4 yards per carry. That's okay. He's capable of a lot more than that. I still would like to see them get him involved in the passing game, you know, either on a screen or coming out of the backfield on some sort of an option route to get him into space a little bit. But I think the talent is there. The offensive line's coming together. There are enough other weapons to take the attention off him. So I think, you know, I think J.J. is going to be a breakout guy in the second half.
I'm going to say one who has performed so far, but I think he's going to take it to another level in the second half. I'm going to say Colin Schooler because I think you know, he's taken over the starting position. I think they've started to phase Brandon Rudd out a little bit. Schooler clearly is a better playmaker, and I just think we're going to start seeing him making some more of those plays where he forces turnovers, gets a sack, makes a big tackle. And the biggest thing with him was he was just too quiet from what we heard. For a guy that's playing middle linebacker, you have to be loud. So if he just gets better at that and runs the defense, I think you're going to see why we were comparing him to Scooby Wright.
I think that's a good call. Colin, I think the arrow's pointing up for him.
For sure.
The leadership thing, the communication thing, he'll figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, if that's all you got to figure out, then you're in good shape.
All those freshmen, by the way, as I pointed out in my film review piece earlier in the week, they all need to get stronger. I mean, you can see it at various times during the game. They do get pushed around. They all play with really good effort and leverage and those things, but I think you'll see a big difference in all of those guys on defense next year when they've had a full year in the weight room.
For sure. All right, and then finally we'll go through final record. I mean, we both had them beating Cal, which will put them at 5-2. For me going the rest of the way, as of now, I have them losing to Wazoo, losing to USC, beating Oregon State, beating ASU, with Oregon kind of as a toss-up for me. But so my final record prediction, I have them at 7-5, going to a decent bowl, maybe Vegas, ideally.
I'm going to go with – this is just insane. I'm going to go with 8-4.
I know. I was just too hesitant. I'm like, that sounds crazy when I say it out loud. So.
It does. I think they can beat Cal. I think they're going to be, like I said, extremely motivated.
I was going to say, so you think they beat either Wazoo or USC, basically, or I guess Oregon?
You know, I think they're going to be Washington, win the next two, lose against USC, beat Oregon State, and then lose one of the last two.
Okay.
You know, as we talked about on Monday, we don't know if Justin Herbert's going to be back. Even if he isn't back, it's a very difficult venue.
Yeah, Eugene's
tough. Never know what's going to happen in the Territorial Cup either.
Yep.
So I'm saying a loss in one of those last two games. But hey, 8-4, 7-5, I mean, I think any Arizona fan would have taken that a month ago. Now, or even 2.5 weeks ago.
Well, the crazy thing is, like, if Khalil Tate averages 200 rushing yards a game like he is right now, I think he's at, what is he at, like 250 or something like that? If he keeps that pace, they could beat anybody they're playing, like even USC. I don't think USC on the road is going to be tough, although USC doesn't have any bye weeks. But like if he just keeps that up, like the sky is really the limit. Like it's just crazy. We don't even know what's possible.
We don't. And the best part about it is it's interesting and it's fun. And yeah. I think those are two adjectives that you could not use to describe last season at just about any point.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we can end on that note. Have a safe flight out to Berkeley tomorrow.
Thank you, Zach.
All right, thanks, Michael. All right, that'll do it for this week's Friday Wildcast. Thanks for listening. As always, subscribe on the Apple Podcasting app, Google Play, download the Wildcaster app if you haven't already. It has all our content and podcasts for free. And be sure to follow us on Twitter all week at Michael Lev will be in Cal by himself at Michael J. Lev. Follow him on Twitter. And follow me at Zach Blatt, at Justin Esports, at G Hansen 711, and Bruce Pasco, of course, for tonight's Red and Blue game. Thanks.
Hey, Ryan, since you're not going to the game, where are you planning on watching the Wildcats?
I'll be stuck at the office, but I wish I could be lounging at home in front of my TV.
Yeah, me too. I've been thinking about getting like a big comfy recliner from Sam Levitt's Furniture.
Ooh, stylish.
Sam Levitt's Furniture has specials on a wide selection of recliners, so you can watch the game in style. You could check out a bunch of options at their Tucson locations. I'm thinking of getting one with swivel action.
Ooh.
But I kind of like the one I saw with cup holders.
Well, while Justin makes up his mind about which recliner he likes best, let's talk some sports.